save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Crudy on the road again up here in Polk County, Amory, Wisconsin, Lake Eyre Country. Getting on the road in the morning, Dom. I'll be back in the Madison studios when Judge Chris Taylor, one of our favorites, joins me in studio. She is running for the appellate court. And Dom, right now, we are going to go live to our colleague, Don Brown. You're in Waukesha, WAUK 540 AM, the Shaw 101.1 FM. And Don Brown is one of our fine hosts, the host of This Week in Waukesha, and also the play-by-play host of many of the sports events that originate from Waukesha. And Don, you were at the site of the Christmas parade vigil in Waukesha. Don, what's going on, man?
That's correct, Mike. I'm here at Cutler Park. We got a really nice turnout. Many of the victims and their families are here. To spend some quality time with the Teagues family. He's going to be on the show this Saturday. On the Cutler Park stage, the Les Paul Performance Center stage, we've got Police Chief Daniel Thompson, Mayor Sean Riley, who's expected to make the opening comments, Fire Chief Steve Howard, Governor Tony Evers here, and Father Pat Hoppe of the Waukesha Catholic Faith Community, who was also one of the victims from the parade last year. So it's great to see such a strong turnout. The city buildings were all closed at 4 o'clock today so that the employees could take time to reflect and also participate in the vigil. So we had a few minutes. The mayor will be starting at 4:39, which is the exact time the events took place, the tragic events of last year. So again, it's a great great example of a Waukesha Strong is what we see here today, Mike.
And Don, let's talk about this Christmas parade tradition. I mean, until it was struck with tragedy last year, this was a great community event, something that I suspect Waukesha looked forward to every year. It was about a year ago at this time that I partnered, and I was in a transaction to purchase a station in Waukesha, this tragedy happened. And we made a commitment to being part of Waukesha. Our studios, where Dom's broadcasting from right now, is on the Waukesha Parade Ground. That's going to come on December 4th this year, but this marks the one-year anniversary. Tell us more about sort of how the community's doing at this stage, Don, 1 year later.
Sure. Yeah, you know, I think it's timely that the trial finally ended when it did last week, so we can put that all behind us. Just a lot of optimism, a lot of support. Again, I'm standing next to the Teagues family. They're getting a lot of hugs and handshakes and embraces from different members of the community. You're right about the parade. This will be the 59th annual parade that's coming up on December 4th, and it's right out of that parade, if you remember the movie The Christmas Story. It's, you know, a lot of joy. You know, it's always freezing cold, but that doesn't hold anybody back. Kids of all ages, 1 to 99, celebrating together. It really is a great tradition. What's different about this coming year, Mike, is that normally it's the Sunday after Thanksgiving, you know, to kind of ring in the holiday shopping season, and the city decided to push that back a week to the 4th. So for the first time, perhaps ever, it's going to be the first Sunday in December as opposed to that Sunday before Thanksgiving. And I think perhaps because it is a little too close to the anniversary date might be one of the reasons. The other reasons may be for just support and planning for the city. And, you know, they do a good job in these types of things. So we're looking forward to a great parade and you know, really excited that Walk Radio will be covering it. And, you know, that, again, we're going to continue being Waukesha Strong, and that the victims, you know, they remain in our hearts as witnessed by tonight's turnout. And really every day, you know, the handing out the blue light bulbs, but the blue light bulbs honestly have been on all year round. So it's just great to see, you know, this community remaining strong and continuing strong into the future.
Don, of course, a terrible tragedy for everyone involved, and no sense of justice can, you know, really bring anybody back, and it's very difficult for all the family members and friends and ever the community to deal with. Don, but is it your sense that people, do they feel like justice has been served in this case?
Yeah, I think so. When you look at the amount of years, again, I'm standing next to the Teagues family, and Don had posted on social media that you know, he was pleased to see that the assailant got 17 and a half years for what he did to his son. And you know, with all the tragedy, especially that young Jackson Sparks, there's also been miracles and redemption hope. You know, Eric Teagues was 5 feet away. You know, he wasn't supposed to survive that attack. This young man was run over. And I'm talking right now, he's deciding which of the three schools he's going to be playing baseball for.
Amazing.
Next year. You know, yeah, and just great kid, great family. His father's a lieutenant in the Caledonia Fire Department. And, you know, good friend of my son's. They play baseball together. And you talk about so hard to keep a good man down. And, you know, Eric Teagues and his family are a shining example. They're going to be on my show this Saturday, too. So Walk Radio, Civic Media will get to know the Teagues family much better on the Saturday morning show. So.
And Don, we're turning the clock here on 4:39. Don, I suspect the ceremony is going to begin.
Yeah, I see Mayor Riley starting to move around. He's pointing at some different people, looking for some support. It looks like he's heading towards the podium. Yep, here Mayor Sean Riley's about to speak. So, yeah, this is ready to begin. And there was really no program. I'll see what the mayor's saying here. I'll share a few brief comments, and I know you got to get back to your show. So he's reading the names of the six who were killed. He's mentioned the 70 others being, you know, physically injured, and the hundreds more that have suffered trauma, emotional stress. So now he's asking for the moment of silence. And the mayor's ended the silence, saying, "We'll never forget."
Folks, you are listening to a very special vigil in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Mayor Sean Riley speaking, acknowledging the tragedy of this event that happened in Waukesha. Don't know if you can hear me, Don. It's
yes.
It's not translating great for our radio audience, but we certainly appreciate you being there live on the scene for us, Don. Obviously, we know that this... 8 o'clock on Saturday morning. Tune in This Week in Waukesha, hosted by Don Brown and the Teagues family. This week in particular will be a very special show. And then next Sunday, WAUK Radio will broadcast live from the new version of the Waukesha Christmas Parade. Hopefully a new, happier version, Don. But the vigil goes on in Waukesha. Don, we appreciate you taking us there today.
Likewise. Thanks, Mike, and thanks for keeping Waukesha in your hearts, everybody. Bye for now.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Don.
Yeesh. Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Obviously, Waukesha has become part of our family, Dom. We had WRD there for about 4 or 5 years, and our office was in Milwaukee, and our facility was in Waukesha. But now we're all committed. We're all in. We are on the Waukesha Parade Route on Wisconsin Avenue, and on Sunday, December 4th, which will be my son's 19th birthday, I'll probably spend my afternoon in Waukesha acknowledging the people in that town, Dom, and the parade, and hopefully a more optimistic Christmas parade going forward, but certainly a somber Christmas parade as well. How could it not be?
Yeah, just really heart goes out to everybody, the families and of the victims. And, you know, it kind of cry for humanity in some respects too, man. You know, we see continual tragedy go on this time here in Waukesha with the parade. We've talked about the numerous shootings out there and the failure of society in some regards. You know, if we look at what could have maybe have been done with this guy and his low bail, would anything have changed, or some of these other shootings, if the red flag law and if this and if that, if they didn't get a weapon, would things have changed? And, you know, we can't go back and undo any of that, but it's certainly, you know, we have to ponder those questions and hopefully use wisdom to guide our future decisions, knowing what we're capable of doing to ourselves. I mean, humanity is certainly a flawed species, capable of so much good and so much tragedy.
Well, Dom, as we did a live listening, again, thank you to Don Brown, former Waukesha Alder, current host of This Week in Waukesha, and a lot of the Waukesha sports content originating out of WAUK. But as we tune in for that anniversary of the carnage from a year ago, Dom, as I observe CNN, there is currently a live news conference going on. Obviously, over the course of last weekend, there was a deadly nightclub shooting at an LGBTQ nightclub in Colorado Springs, Colorado. My understanding, at least 5 dead, 20-plus injured. And it was actually the patrons of the nightclub that disarmed the shooter, ultimately, Dom. But this, you know, I've told you, and you know this going in today, I don't know how to have this conversation any longer, because thoughts and prayers are just so unfulfilling. There's nothing we can argue about with another mass shooting, another tragedy that ever seems to move the Republican electorate. They're okay. It's like they're willing to accept carnage in exchange for some sort of Second Amendment freedom unrestrained. And it's just too hard for me to have these conversations at this late hour sometimes, Tom. And I realize we do talk shows, so we got to talk.
I know, man.
But I don't know what I can possibly say, what this press conference can possibly shed light on, other than the fact that some people in this world are motivated by hate. And Darrell Brooks, you could claim this is some person that was out there motivated, you know, just by, let's call it mental psychosis, some sort of overwhelming emotion, fleeing from the police, something of that sort. But if I understand the story as it's being reported out of Colorado Springs, Tom, that sprang entirely from hate. That crime springs from bigotry and hatred. And I'm not saying, you know, if someone's dead, they're dead. The tragedy is just as strong. The grief is just as felt. But when someone targets another group out of pure hatred, Dom, that seemingly takes these crimes to a whole different level. Someone asked, why didn't Darrell Brooks get a hate crime multiplier? Because it wasn't the motivation, seemingly. But this newest crime out in Colorado Springs, don't be surprised if a hate crime multiplier isn't in effect. That's exactly what we're talking about when we discuss hate crimes.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Taking a quick break, coming back with your calls, 844-967-2789.
Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Devil's Advocates Radio Show rolling into the happier Monday happy hour. Dom, as mentioned earlier, Crudy on the road, Amory, beautiful Minneapolis Outmarket. Welcome to our KTNF 950 AM listeners. Welcome to our Lake Air 1260 AM listeners. And Dom, welcome to our fine guest for the hour. He is Scott Ross. He's a Twitter firebrand and a friend of ours. Scott, now that Trump's back on Twitter, man, do you feel like you have a new purpose in life?
I feel like I blocked him. I don't want to see his stuff. I blocked him. I actually blocked Elon Musk too. I don't want to see his stuff either. So I'm choosing to resign in disgust rather than quit, I suppose.
Now, did they block you before you blocked them, yeah, Scott?
No. There's usually the people who block me, it's interesting, like at least people I know, noteworthy people I know, who blocked me on Twitter are all like Republican members of the media, like George Stanley, the editor in chief of the Journal Sentinel. He blocked me in One Wisconsin Now when I used to work there long, long ago. Maybe some of the other clowns. Chachi blocks me.
Chachi.
But he blocks everybody. I got that Travis Tritt block when, you know, he was doing that, when he was blocking everybody. Meghan McCain, you may have heard her father was John McCain. You may have heard her mention that one or 2 million times. Who else? Oh, couple of the clowns from the New York Times. Anyhow, who cares about that? What's happening? We have a new day dawning here in Wisconsin. Thank goodness.
You know, Scott Ross, I feel like I'm running for something, man. I'm traveling all 72 of Wisconsin's counties apparently this month, but we think it's very important. I don't know if you saw this during the elective cycle. The New York Times ran an article about Ron Johnson, and Ron Johnson had gone running to right-wing talk radio for 96 hours this year,
yep,
over 300 mm-hmm. interviews, Scott. And we as Democrats wonder why it is that through the long course of an elective cycle, we always just seemingly sometimes come up a little bit short. And I would theorize, Scott, it might be because we don't have the same messaging platform. Well, I'd like to think that's changing, Scott. But when you look around at the outcome of the last election, the midterms, what do you see changing about the state of Wisconsin?
Well, I mean, I think you make a great point. Like, the Democrats are completely and totally outgunned when it comes to the noise machine, the echo chamber, the opportunities to disseminate message that the Republicans have. And, the clowns on white nationalist radio throughout Milwaukee can literally say whatever they want. They can bring on Republicans. The mainstream media then will dutifully respond to comments that they make in these atmospheres in which it's not journalism. It's a right winger lobbing softballs at a right winger so that they get out their talking points. You know, I mean, I'll say this about you guys, like you actually do ask questions and don't just take the company line, and have challenged, and I believe me on, you know, more than one occasion as to the, forcing me to defend my viewpoint. You know, you're not just like an echo chamber. But I think that that's one vehicle in which we're outgunned on. I think Democrats, I'm saying Democrats are outgunned in that aspect. I think we're also outgunned because our people are less aggressive about trying to counter the Republicans in these different vehicles. You know, hate radio in Milwaukee. Like, I mean, I don't know how many times I reached out to Charlie Sykes, his producer, and to his station manager, and to, you know, the head of whatever that radio network was, what, you know, at Journal Communications, saying, this guy's on the radio trashing me. I want to be on to defend myself. I want to be on to challenge that. And they responded that, you know, I remember the one guy responded, I still have the email, where he said, you know, he's not going to tell any journalist like Charlie Sykes how to, who they have to have on their show, you know. And Clan O'Donnell over on that other, you know, Lavern radio station is no different in terms of their cowardice. They'll attack, but they won't have people on. I mean, you guys always used to have Ron Johnson on. I don't know. Does he still come on your show?
We don't let him on anymore, man. We had a little following all a while back, but I appreciate that, Scott. And yeah, we do try to have the conversation. I take the old adage, man. If you're sitting next to each other having a drink in a bar and you give me a line of BS, I'm going to challenge you on it. Or not you, but you know, whoever it may be. I mean, that you got to have some, you know, credibility. You got to get a baseline for conversation. And that's what we certainly try to do. And all voices are welcome. All thoughts are welcome. But if they suck, we're going to call you out on it.
With regards yes, men are boring. You know?
The election, lot of money. I know he took some umbrage, Scott Ross, with what the finder's fee that the Ulines and some of the big Hendrix, the big donors of Ron Johnson gave when he gave them a $250 million tax break. Scott, what's your impression on how much money, number one, is impacting elections generally, but this specific deal with Ron Johnson, Ulines, and the Hendricks, what are your thoughts there, man, and how that affected this election?
Yeah, I mean, for years and years, we tried to do things, you know, like McCain-Feingold or whatever, you know, and pretend that that was going to somehow help. But, you know, like Jeff Goldblum said in the original, you know, in the original Jurassic Park, life finds a way and money finds a way. No matter how you try and curtail it, it's going, and it's like squeezing a balloon, it's going to pop out another end. And the thing, I think the challenge that you have is that Citizens United basically, and that was the decision, of course, that allowed 501c4s to do direct advocacy. That's the essential of, you know, One Wisconsin Now was a 501c4. And we, prior to, you know, not that we ever like told you how to vote, but we could have after that. We chose not to, in protest of what the Supreme Court was doing. Plus, you know, what was the point? Like, I there is enough Democrats I dislike. I don't want to, you know, it didn't make any sense for the purposes of our organization. We were advocating for progressive advocacy, for progressive policies and ideas and values. And so what Citizens United did in changing the law so that 501c4s could do direct advocacy is it basically undid the balance of campaign finance laws in the state of Wisconsin. Because what happened is that, you know, or I'm sorry, across the country, because like corporate donations in Wisconsin are prohibited. There are campaign finance limits. And everything has to be disclosed. And Citizens United removed all of those things. So somebody like, you know, Diane Hendricks, the wealthiest woman in Wisconsin, can write a check to a 501c4 organization and they can just spend whatever they want. We don't know it. You know, it happens that they gave it to a super PAC because it was federal spending, which has different rules, you know, than state spending. But that's, you know, I mean, it's obscene. Let's say the numbers. Over the course of the Trump tax cuts, the Ulines and Diane Hendricks stand to make $500 million, $500 million over the life of the tax cuts. What you reference is what they've gotten already.
Yes.
Okay. Ron Johnson specifically publicly extorted Trump to have the kinds of companies that Uline, Hendricks, and Ron Johnson operates, pass-throughs, be eligible for an enormous tax break that every financial analyst will tell you top to bottom is something that rich people do, not poor people, not the middle class. These companies are run by rich people and owned by rich people. And so he publicly extorted this tax break for them. Trump, you know, said, oh, yeah, sure. Paul Ryan says we can do this. Hell yeah. You know, Paul Ryan, who's from like the same, you know, neighborhood as Diane Hendricks. And as a result, they basically wrote at least as far as we know so far, $30 million in campaign finance spending for the effort against Mandela Barnes and on behalf of Ron Johnson. And he, and that was actually the gap between the two, you know, in terms of the spending. But the idea that you could give somebody a tax break and they could turn around and basically underwrite your campaign is obscenity. I mean, it is obscene. And so,
Scott, let me jump in here for just a moment.
Yeah, please,
Ben
shut
Winkler,
me up.
The Democratic Party has gotten quite good at raising gobs of money also, let's call it from Hollywood, from moneyed interest. Scott, how is that any different when Ben Winkler's raising $100 million or when a super PAC's doing it? And I realize different federal and state campaign finance laws, but it's direct corporate giving to a party, is it not?
Now, the corporate giving to the party is different. There is a segregated account that there are only certain things that you can spend. You can only give $12,000 as a corporation to the party. And let's just say, remember, all these changes that allow this were made by Scott Walker and the Republican-controlled legislature. The Democrats, you know, complained about. But I don't blame the Democrats for trying to compete and, you know, superseding the Republicans when it came to that. But it's individual money that you're talking about that's going, you know, Dom, that, or Mike, that's going to the actual, to the Democratic Party. There is, again, a very small segment, $12,000 per corporation you can get. And that only has specific uses that it can be. It can't be to put television ads up saying vote for Tony Evers or anything like that. And I think there are the finance laws are even stricter for federal candidates, which is why when we were complaining about the DCCC and House Majority PAC leaving Brad Path in Western Wisconsin high and dry, that it, it wasn't the party's fault.
Yeah. So. Scott Ross, our pal, Firebrand, he's a Gemini, Mr. Ethics. You got a few more minutes for us on the other side of the short break?
Sure.
Absolutely. I want to get into that conversation in a little bit more detail. The Brad Path, whose fault was it? Was it anybody's fault? Did the DCCC not step up enough? Did Ben Winkler do the right things? You do the right things, folks. We are the Devil's Advocates. That is Scott Ross, our pal. Going to stick around for just a little bit more. You can join us on the phones as well. Happy Monday to us all. The politics, they never stop. 844-967-2789. We will be right back.
Is it ever gonna be enough? Is it ever gonna be enough? Is it ever gonna be enough?
Kicking ass and taking names since the Wisconsin uprising, the Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines open. We'll get to you in just a bit at 844-967-2789. Our pal, Scott Ross, he's a firebrand. He's on Twitter, and he is also known as Mr. Ethics and a friend of the Devil's Advocates. Scott, thanks for sticking around, man. This Brad Path, man, I mean, it was... And for a guy like Van Orden to become a congressman is just so offensive to me. And I want to get your sense. And we've had this conversation, but I always love your takes, Scott. That's why you're here, man. DCCC versus Ben Winkler and the national Dems, the local Dems. You know, Brad, you know, putting up a great fight, coming so close. Man, what could have been, Scott? What's your sense? Who do you blame on that one?
Okay, so I've been here since I moved here in 1997, so I'm a newcomer. And I have consistently seen, when it comes to House races in the state of Wisconsin, Democrats get left behind by the National Democratic contingency, DCCC, the House Majority PAC. You know, I mean, they're not even putting up fights against guys like, you know, Brian Stile and Gallagher, because they're considered to be, you know, in quote unquote safe seats, which is ridiculous, especially the way the first was redrawn. But when it came to the Brad Path versus Van Orden race, the malpractice, you know, I mean, any Democrat who donates to the DCCC, who's from Wisconsin, is a moron at this point, because they have never delivered for us. And this one is so offensive. You know, Derek Van Orden was at the terrorist insurrection. He was on the main grounds. He lied about it. He was, you know, he bragged in a book about sexually harassing women when he was in the military. He is on probation for trying to take a gun onto a plane. He attacked a teenage LGBTQ woman out in, you know, out in Western Wisconsin. And then I don't know if you guys know the story. He was in a library. And so he proceeded to then check out every LGBTQ book because they so offended him. He didn't want anybody to have access to it. And then on top of it, I'm forgetting one of the things, but these are all the things for this guy. Like, he's just wholly unfit. He refused to debate Brad Path.
Right.
You know, he was a chicken on top of it. And the idea that this is a seat that was held by Ron Kind for 26 years. You know, I used to work for Ron, like, way back, you know, many, many, many years ago, after he was fully established as a member of Congress, but not vulnerable, so anything I did wouldn't get him thrown out of office, right?
Very important.
You know, and Brad worked for him. And the thing about it is, you had this terrorist insurrectionist up against — Brad wasn't some guy who just fell off the turnip truck. He's a former aide to Kind. He was a former Obama appointee for agriculture. He's a state senator currently. And the idea that the DCCC and the House Majority PAC reneged on the commitment for $2 million in television in a race that was lost by a hair. It's just, you know, and the thing is, the thing that's so upsetting about it is, you didn't have to have some sort of nuanced policy debate over whose healthcare whose healthcare plan was better. You had a terrorist insurrectionist. And we were actually out there, and I helped film some ads, you know, that Brad put up. We got we had these guys, three Vietnam veterans and a guy from Desert Storm. And like, we asked them their reaction to when they saw that Derek Van Orten was at the terrorist insurrection, that he's running for Congress. They wanted to tear his head off. You know, one guy said something that I can't even repeat on air. you know, and I, you know, the idea, he was just there. He had to be one of the most vulnerable members. And it was a seat that Democrats held for 26 years. And they left Brad and they left Wisconsin high and dry. And I don't think that should ever be forgotten about it. And I know Mark Pocan was frustrated as hell about that. And he articulated, there was a story in the Journal Sentinel where both Mark and Congressional Representative Gwen Moore out of Milwaukee were both like, this is garbage. Ron Kind was angry about it. And then I got to pop off. So that was fun because, like, nobody's paying my bills out of the DCCC, and they failed us. They completely and totally failed us, you know, and, you know, I hate to see a Democrat lose, especially in a tight race, but, you know, the head of the DCCC, Sean Maloney, actually lost his race in New York City. Yeah. And there's some of us who, like, you know, unless that's the deciding vote, you know, for keeping the House majority, good riddance, you know? But that's a thing, like, and it gets back to the first thing that you were talking about, Mike, which is, we've got, you know, Democrats have to have accountability towards these clowns. And that is using aspects like the radio, because every community doesn't have a newspaper anymore. You know, but every county has a radio station. Everybody who turns on their radio dial can hear something, and providing that, you know, accountability, not 3 weeks before the election when you just throw up a bunch of ads, but throughout the year, throughout the 2-year cycle, yeah, is something that Democrats are utterly and completely failing on. And I only say that because I had skin in the game, because at One Wisconsin Now, we did accountability and we found stuff out about Republicans who were violating our values. And we got that into the press because it is important, because people who vote tend to be older. And those people still get their news from radio, from television, and from newspapers. And so leaving that cheddar on the table and not, you know, not put something in there because you can't buy it, you know, you got to get your people on the air. You got to get those contrasts made. You got to show the difference between them and us.
Scott, I don't want to interrupt this fine conversation, but I got a few more questions. Our fine guest, Scott Ross, for a few more minutes. Scott, a two-parter to close out the segment. Gerrymandering. Does the state Supreme Court, and if we can just get someone who's not a conservative elected, could that change the outcome? And second part, citizen referendum. Scott, is it time in the state of Wisconsin for we the people to go lobby, because this intransigent governance of gerrymandered Republicans against a Democratic governor means nobody's satisfied? Could we go lobby both sides for citizen referendums, binding sorts? Your thoughts, Scott Ross.
Okay, I'll take the first part first. The first part first is, yes, I believe that the maps are so clearly unconstitutional that they will, that if we get a progressive court majority, that will be overturned. On your second thing, I'm a little more scared than you are, you know, because referendum costs money. And, you know, that scares me about whether or not, given all the might that business has and the Republicans have, would Democrats be able to compete? That's not to say I don't think it's not a bad idea, because like this government is completely and totally unresponsive to us, the legislature. But if we change the maps, that might change it too. So I'll hold it out. I'll hold out. You got some points, Mike.
Scott Ross, our pal, thank you so much once again, man. We'll talk to you soon, brother.